Hi there, everybody. Welcome to Season 2, Episode 23 of the Hard Truth Inside the Football Industry podcast with me, Philip Heidson, and Darren McAnthony, chairman and co-owner of English Championship side Peterborough United. Welcome back to Florida, Dara.
You got out of title to that, Philip. And last 16 member of the FA Cup.
Fifth round, is that what it is? I lose track of the numbers of the rounds.
No, listen. First of all, it's great to be home. Second of all, apologies to all our listeners for not doing a show last week. It was deadline day. And, you know, it was a mad. I was meant to be in Sky that night. We were going to do the podcast. And I couldn't be off the phone because there was so much stuff going on. Do you know what I mean? So there was no way I could have done like a 90-minute podcast, just like I couldn't have been in Sky Studios. Do you know what I mean? So it was kind of one of them days. It was a busy day.
You know, is that the craziest deadline day you've had, or the most you're unsure of the outcome going into the day?
I think it was the most crazy window. People seem to think I love when we get garner attention for our players. And, ooh, somebody wants to buy our players and da-da-da-da-da, and we're always trying to sell a player. I would have been delighted with not one article, not one headline, not one rumor, not one offer in the whole of January. You know, we hadn't set up financially to sell a player. We always knew we had a deficit hole from January to the summer, and you're hoping for a cup run, you're hoping for whatever. But there was never anything in there like, oh, sell Dembele or do whatever. But at the same time, as January goes on and you're thinking, well, that player potentially wants to leave, then you've got to scramble to do deals. And of course, we brought players in. I think we brought five or six in. And, you know, that goes without saying. You're trying to help the squad. You're trying to strengthen in areas. You've got injuries. Do you know what I mean? You're losing. You know, we didn't foresee losing Dan Butler for the season. You know, we didn't foresee losing Jack Taylor again, you know, for a few weeks. So, you know, things happen in certain areas. You kind of move around and you need, you know, we didn't think Harrison Burrows were going to chip a bone in his foot. You know, all those little things that happened, you're trying to react. It was difficult in many ways. And I made this comparison. We went for certain players that fit our criteria, our profile. And if we'd been second in League One, I would have landed a few players differently. They would have walked to us. Where we were, you get a lot of the, you know, look over your shoulder and go, no, I don't fancy going there. And, you know, we actually had a couple of players who turned us down and went to clubs that were like 8th and 9th in League One. Really bizarre. So you're losing football games. You got issues with clubs after your players, you know, potentially tapping your players up, all that kind of palaver that goes on. And again, Alan Swan, do not create controversial headlines, please. I have to put that disclaimer in every podcast. And you're kind of like, you're dealing with all these bizarre things that are going on. And at the same time, you're trying to strengthen and you're trying to bring players in. And, you know, again, you've got players who genuinely don't want to come to a club that's fighting for its life. So, look, I can understand that. Sometimes I can't because they're younger players and you think, well, hang on, you're 21, you're 22, you're 23. That's football. You know, sometimes a battle like that's good for your CV. Sometimes that's good for you as a player, you know, so that's something you should want to embrace. And it wasn't even a financial thing. You know, they chose to go to a different league because they just didn't quite fancy it.
Players that do that, you know, you stay up and you're looking, obviously, to strengthen the squad in the summer. Are you going, I mean, have they basically cut the cord of any opportunity of coming back in the future because they took that approach?
Well, absolutely. There was one in particular that was at a Premier League club, and his contract was up in the summer. The club had an option on him. And we'd spoke early in the window. The Prem club were trying to do a deal with us for him, the player. Fine. Player was like, not so keen, thinking about it for a week or two. At that stage, you're kind of like, well, you're thinking about it. We got games to play. And he's worried about his future in the summer. What if the club doesn't take his option up? He needs to find a new club. Great. Well, we're a great club. If you come and do the business, we'll give you a contract and do a deal and you sign permanently. Instead, he's chosen to go to League One. The club he's gone to, very little chance of going up. So then you're thinking, what's that all about? Because if we do the business like I think we can, we stay in the champ, we're stronger next year, we sign you, and now you're one league from the Premier League again. So, I don't get it. It was really, really bizarre. And then it was kind of like the last 7-8 days where it all got a little bit crazy. Obviously, Dembele wanted to go to Bournemouth. We obviously had the Blackpool, the Norburn thing. Which came, you know, for me, that blew my mind at the time. And you know, you don't want to lose your captain. We were looking to strengthen in that area, but suddenly it's like, shit. And then there was interest in other players. And I don't want to draw controversy to that because my manager is finally happy to get the window closed. He doesn't want any more newspaper headlines about players. He doesn't want it intimated that players are unhappy. They're not unhappy. Footballers are a funny breed. You know, if, and I'm not talking about Norburn specifically, But if they're not playing and they're not in the 11, they suddenly want to weigh in. They want to play in a team and they want to be loved again and da-da-da-da-da. Maybe some feel, well, I need a fresh start. But I know they're better than that. And I know whilst they're not in the team, they'll get back in the team and they're good enough to get back in the team. And then they'll change their mindset. So I knew what it was almost like I knew what was better for them. It wasn't good for them going to League One. Better staying here. You know, 7 months ago, we're celebrating together a promotion. All's love is all as well. And now all of a sudden, it's, oh, I want to go here and I want to go there. And it's always sometimes a footballer's answer, if they're not in the 11, well, I want to leave or I want to go. You know what I mean? Norwich was just a geographical thing and his family, and that's fine. I settle that down. You know, obviously Blackpool were making numerous bids, but I settled it down and I told the player, and I said to my manager, what do you want to do? Do you want to keep him? He's like, yeah. I said, okay, you get the final call. No matter how many times Blackpool bid, he won't leave. And I'll talk to the player and I'll get his head straight and say to him, we will support you, we'll do everything. And I said to the player, there's 120 odd days till June. I give you my word, if you stay and do the business and we stay in this league, I will sell you at the start of June. It's basically 3 and a bit months. So you're going to have to sit down with your family, make an agreement, do whatever. You know, at the time, I hadn't seen my kids for 5 weeks. So I can empathize with anybody who's away from their family. So we're working with him on that. In fairness, he was excellent Saturday when he came back in. The manager, you know, I respect the manager, the way he handled it. You know, people would say, well, you strip the captaincy, you do this, do that. No, sometimes you have to treat the person as a human being, not a footballer. And I think the manager did that, and I tried to be fair. Dembele, like I said, and I'm not trying to say he was feigning injury like some people would say. He wasn't available for 2 or 3 games, and he had this sore leg. And then in your mind, you're thinking, well, if you keep him and you stop him going to a club, he's going to sign in the summer for somebody for free. Is he going to want to risk an injury? That run in the last 18, 19 games. You know, if he's got no contract in the summer anyway.
Put his career at risk if he puts himself in and gets an injury.
Yeah, he wants to sign a 20 grand a week contract summer. Is he really going to go in 50-50 tackles, you know, when you're fighting for your life? So he came to me before the Sheffield United game. It was 20 minutes before kickoff. And again, like, what are you doing coming to me before a game? But that shows the player's mind, right? It's not about the game that's out there. It's about, well, the window's on Monday. I want to leave. You know, Bournemouth, I don't want to go to Birmingham. I don't want to go to Black. Because I said to him, like, why aren't you going to Birmingham? Like, I know the money being offered. What are you doing? Well, I think Bournemouth have got a better chance of getting the Premier League. I said, okay, fair enough. But what if they're not? What if they're in the same league as Birmingham next year? You know, you could be on like twice the dough. Like, so which is it? You know, I'm Blackburn. I really fancy Blackburn to go up. And again, I was like, you know, and then he was like, well, you know, Bournemouth's my, and I was thinking, are you going to play at Bournemouth? Are you going to get in? I mean, you know, all those things. But at that point, I'm looking at him going, I can see in his eyes, you know, none of the stuff I was saying was getting home. I'd had his agent the week before, sat in my office, now I've got a player. So in the end, we did the best deal we could with Bournemouth. And you know, if he comes off at Bournemouth, it'll be a very good deal for the football club. But we also did it because I think, and I said to the manager, he came up after the Sheffield United game, and I said, look, I need to know before I leave and go back to my house in Surrey, do you want me to sell Dembele tomorrow? Do you want me to let him leave the Bournemouth, or do you want to keep him? I said, me and the partners happily go, he stays. And he went, no, do the deal. Do the deal. So I think, and then deadline day was crazy because you got Blackpool making a couple of more bids. Then late at night, we'd had obviously Sunderland come in for Beavers. And that was really bizarre because 3 weeks before, we'd made Beavs, you know, potentially to go out and get games. He wasn't in our team. He'd come back from an injury. You know, so we thought, well, maybe, you know, does he go out? He's on a good wage. You know, it would free up some space to do some business ourselves. So we're, you know, again, when you're working within a budget and it's tight, you're trying to rob Peter to pay Paul. You're trying to make things work. You're trying to bring in players. We brought in 5 or 6. We don't have a bottomless pit. The championship's not cheap. So you're trying to make, I said it the other day, I was trying to cook a gourmet meal using vegan ingredients at times. It was really, really difficult. You know, you've got a deficit, you've got no more money to spend, and I'm trying to bring a left back in, a right back in, 2 central midfielders, a striker in. You know, we don't like doing loans, but we can't buy yet. We'll do it in the summer. So now I've got to do loans. Now I've got to try and loan players I could potentially do deals for in the summer. It was the most difficult window of my life. And then you're making decisions, well, okay, a Beavers, if he's not playing and involved and he's had an injury for a few months, if we get him out till the end of June, you know, his wages could free up and bring in 2. And then Beavs can go and get some games and then come back to us in the summer. So we'd obviously approached clubs in early in the window. One of them was Sunderland. I know Lee Johnson, you know, did want him. And Sunderland at the time felt, you know, his age, they didn't like, his wages. And then come deadline, they were getting phone calls from them to bring Beavers in. I think they just lost 6-0 or something before. And again, I'm not having to dig at Sunderland, but at that stage, we'd made the decision with everything going on in the window. Me and the manager and Barry were like, bar Dembele, nobody else is leaving. Sammy's not leaving. Love him to bits. You know, his personality, his character, I think he'll play a big part in the end of the season. You know, Beeves is our club captain. You know, he's back in around it. The manager's got him in the team. We think he can. You know, we don't want to lose him now. We can't replace him. And, you know, Ollie, for all the reasons I just said. So we didn't want to lose those players. And it was kind of like, Dems is enough. You start two or three leave.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, that gets crazy. Then it's almost as people were like accusing me of waving the white flag. One of the reasons we weren't overly worried about Dembele leaving was we did a lot of planning on how we were going to play for the second half of the season. We're very confident that Poku and Randall would step up. If people listen to our podcast in August, I said Poku from January onwards will play a big part. Do you remember when I said that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Because at the time, it was people were looking, saying, well, you got him from Colchester. You know, how is he going to step up in the Championship? And, you know, he's been a fantastic player in League Two for sure. And I felt as well, it's only a matter of time because he's torn up that division.
Yeah. He's 19. And we thought, 4 or 5 months, bet him in. He'd had COVID, he'd had issues. And if we can bet him in, and if we can get him 10 under 23 games to and do the conditioning work and build up his strength, build up his endurance, you know, coach him the things maybe he could do better that he didn't do in League Two, create more goals, score more goals. But most importantly, what we loved about him was he would do it both ways. He would work hard that way, and he would create going that way. And he broke onto the scene, obviously, in the Birmingham game. He had a great game against Sheffield United, and he was good again for 50 minutes against QPR, but tired. And the reason he's tired is because it's a big level, and it's not an under-23 game, and he hasn't had a massive amount of games. But we were very confident that he would be – he could give us a lot of things Dems couldn't. You know, he might not score the wonder goals Dems does 3 or 4 times a year, but over a 10-game space, would he give you more than Dembele in the 10 games? So, and then Randall's back from his hamstring, and we again – so we felt in that area, if we were playing the way we're playing – in the 10 area, Randall, Poku, and George Grant could play a big part in that position. And we already have our strikers. We have Morton, we have Ricky, we have Mario coming back fit, we have Clark Harris, we've got Sammy. So we felt we were covered. When you start thinking of those names and then Dembele, you know, you can't get all those players in the squad. So we made the decision, we're not waving a white flag. We're back in our judgment. We're back in our policy. We're back in what we wanted to do. We thought Dems would go in the summer. It's why we spent money on Randall and Poku. Dems didn't go in the summer, but we thought he would, and we ended up with extra players. So it was never a white flag event. It was just about doing the right business. And we feel, you know, the kid Coulson hasn't had a good run at Ipswich with injuries. Brilliant at Middlesbrough 2 years ago, young player of the year, a more offensive minded left back. You know, Ali Mumba from Norwich obviously has been great for us. You know, great debut, icky second game, great third and fourth. You know, we think again, really, really good addition. Fuchs, brilliant. I did that deal while I was in Spain. I was in Spain on business. The whole Norman thing was blown up. We'd made bids for Fuchsie in the summer. He was one that we'd done a lot of analysis on, and I'm always weary about Scotland because we haven't had a lot of luck in Scotland. But we knew he was the type of player that in the Championship, you know, his statistics on tackles and interceptions was something maybe we didn't quite have at a certain level. And I said to Barry when I was in Spain, reach out to, obviously, his club. He's out of contract in 5 months. Tell him, look, this is what we have. You know, we'll try one last time. This is what we have. We give him the good sell-on. We give him the fee. You know, what do they want to do? And it was like on a Thursday night, and the Norburn stuff was blown up. We found about Taylor's hamstring. We had Sheffield United on TV on Saturday. We had no central midfielders. And fair play to the boy. The boy basically, once we agreed the deal, I want to say at 11 at night, because the owner of his club lives in America. So he couldn't get in a flight the next morning. It was sold out. So the young boy, he put his baby and his wife in a car and he drove like 8 hours through the night. He had to be signed by 12 o'clock to basically like get
to play at a weekend.
And play at a weekend. And then the clearance took another 9 hours till we found out, you know. And I love the commitment from him. I love the fact that he was somebody that – it was so nice to hear somebody wanted to play for Peterborough. Right. It was so nice that, you know, it was almost like anybody, I'm joking, that he, you know, the commitment to drive through the night, to come all the way, he wanted to have his chance in the Championship. He hadn't written us off. Hadn't been like some players going, nah, they're down. You know, he was confident about, I can go in there, I can make a difference, I can help the team. You know, doesn't speak fluent English, you know, but like fought his balls off to get down, play the game. The kid didn't sleep. he played against Sheffield United on TV on a Saturday. You know, I'll take that commitment any day of the week for my players. So, you know, and then obviously we got Morton during the window. So we felt the window was a good window. And we just felt like, okay, we need some breaks here. We need some luck. Obviously, Birmingham backfired on us. We were 2-0 up and we gave it away with 5 minutes to go. But the signs were good. You know, and then QPR on Saturday, you know, me and the manager spoke about the cup and said, look, this is a chance to create some good feel factor. We need some good feel, you know, factor around the club. You know, fans, some of the fans are a little bit like anxious. You know, some have turned, yeah, there's a few on social media have gone toxic, a minority. And then there's the old fans who've been there for a long time who are very supportive of me, the manager, no matter what. So it was like, you'd love to reward them. So we'd said, look, if we can win the cup tie, you're in the fifth round, the manager get a cup, gives everyone a great feeling of winning again. You know, you get a decent draw and everyone's excited. So the weekend went exactly the plan. And whilst it wasn't the greatest to watch, you know, QPR at 80% of the possession, they're third in the championship. You know, they're a good championship football club. You know, they dominate the ball. You know, they're gonna do that. But you know, you gotta dig in. We dug in. We nicked the goal in the first half, and then we brought on our superstar teenage striker. You know, who's had been up and down with injuries, and he did exactly what he's all about. He ran in like Usain Bolt behind the back line. You know, great. You know, Jando, the boy from Scotland, won the tackle. Bailey from Norwich put the ball in where Ricky wanted it. Ricky went, you know what I mean, like a greyhound in between the defenders and just first time back.
Yep.
And it wasn't only his goal. If you watch what he did to their back line for the next 10 minutes, he terrorized their back line because he pressed them with pace. And not only that, the ref gave a red card to one of their players and then changed the card nearly. He was going to send them off. You know what I mean? And that's what he can do. He's 90. People forget. I said to the manager, he's 19. You know, he's been with us for 10 years, but it's like people think, oh, he's 24. When's it going to happen for him? He's 19. Like, if that kid gets a run of games, forget about what you can't do. Technically, not the best. Yeah, couldn't win headers, even though the boy's been developing. He's had his injury spur problems. He's had whatever. And I think there were a lot of growing pains. But the one thing he's got, the asset that he's got, two assets. One is pace, maybe the quickest championship striker. And the second thing is he can finish. And you marry all that up, and you got your good coaches around him, improving him and confidence, he's going to be a player. He's going to be a hell of a player. So delighted for him, really happy for the kid. Delighted for the fans. Really happy for the manager because he's taken some serious like slack in the last few weeks. And it would have to happen when I leave the fucking country.
Well, just to talk on QPR just for a minute, does that, you're always talking about belief and the players, like it's almost like they don't believe that they can do it. Does that reinstill some, because you've got such an important, you know, FA Cup aside, you've got such an important period of time coming up. February, you know, you've got a lot of games that, you know, are winnable, you know, you've got really important games there. And do they now believe, or they recognize that we can go toe-to-toe, we can beat championship teams, we do deserve to be here. And maybe that's what's been missing a little bit. I mean, Birmingham, you were all over them. I mean, it was just typical, wasn't it? Losing, I watched that game and losing those two. When the goal went in 5 minutes before time, you just knew that a second one was going to follow. But they completely dominated up until the 85th minute.
Look, when you're down and things happen. And, you know, we dominated them for 86 minutes. And then, you know, one error leads to another error, you know. And they're the mental aspects that I feel for my players. Look, I'm very honest. I will call out players on the podcast. I'll do whatever else. But when they give you a great performance and, you know, their own manager is apologising for a 2-2 draw they should never have got. You know, we were very good. We weren't great against Sheffield United, you know, but again, we were missing six first-team players. So, you know, a team like us can't lose six people out of its 11. We can lose one or two, can't lose six. And I'm not making excuses, but it's a tough ask.
Beating Sheffield United is not what's going to keep you up either.
No, it's a tough ask. But you're at home, you want to give your fans more. I understand why the fans are frustrated. They don't want to see us camped in, being dominated. I get it. I understand that, you know. And we have a swashbuckling reputation. But Saturday showed that, you know, we were resilient. We dug in. We got young players. Ronnie's just come back again into the team. He was brilliant against West Brom. He got fucking concussion. He couldn't play for 2 weeks. You know, again, he was magnificent Saturday. You know what I mean? He was the sponsors' man of the match. ESPN in America gave him man of the match. You know what I mean? Swanee gave him 8.5 because, you know, he nicks those things. You don't, a lot of the time you don't see it and you miss it. He nicking it would end up as a goal. So, and again, young players. Ricky obviously won us the game. Joe Ward, who's probably been not the most confident, you know, scored a goal. It's so important. They're such lovely young men, our players. I'd love to say some of my players are assholes. I'd love to say I've got some right fucking wrong ones in there. I've got some dickheads. It's really easy to say that and go, well, that's why we're not winning, whatever else. But there's genuinely, hand to heart, nobody in my squad that I dislike. Now, they might dislike me at times because I might say whatever on a podcast, you know what I mean, and tell them a few home truths. But there's nobody in there that I couldn't sit with and have a coffee and enjoy their company. They're all good people. So I'm praying and hoping for them that they get some luck, they stay fit, they get a run. Jack Taylor's best game is against Birmingham. Dennis Hammy goes. It's his best game in nearly fucking 8 months. And he suddenly looked like that championship midfielder. And God bless him, it goes. You know, the little kicks, Harrison, you know, the chip in his bone. It's the little things, you know what I mean, that have just gone wrong. And you kind of want to get to and go, maybe it's gone wrong for a reason. It's got us to this point. And then we're going to have this great second half and we're going to stay up. And then all those things are forgotten and you learn going into the season. So, look, what will be, will be. Me and the manager made it very clear. We spoke before when the window closed and then he spoke to the players the next day. And my words were, we all we got. We all we got. This is it now. We all we got. Players and staff, we all we got. And that includes fans. So, you can bitch and moan about the manager. You can bitch and moan about players losing. You can bitch and moan about the owners not supporting, you know, more transfers and transfer policies being crap and all that shit. But we all we got. So either buy into that or don't, you know. But at this moment in time, that's it. And that should be written on the tin for the rest of the season. We'll see where it takes us. If it takes us up in the league, great. If it doesn't and there's a plan B, there's a plan B. Nobody's died. We'll deal with that, you know, and we'll do our best. But there's so much good stuff going on. And sometimes just a football result just feels like a setback and all the good stuff that goes on. So, look, happy for them all to have won on Saturday. We've got a massive game on Wednesday. We want to win the game. We need to win the game. Let's see what the players do. You know, there's a big, like, 4 weeks coming up. And, yes, we're all excited about Man City. I couldn't care about the FA Cup for now. You know, happy for the fans. I'm not even going to the game. I'm going to be in Dubai. I planned a holiday with Natalie and I need this holiday. This is like the biggest holiday of my life I need, honest to God. Like, when I got back from England, yeah, I was completely mentally burnt out. Like I was a beaten fucking peanut on Tuesday, the day after the window closed. I was like, I flew on a Tuesday. And yeah, I needed to get out of Dodge. So just like come home, have a few drinks with my wife, you know, fucking just enjoy all the home luxuries, you know. Have some banter with my children, you know, watch my son driving around. Now he's got his license, you know, I took him out car shopping yesterday. You know, we all went to the Melting Pot on Saturday as a family. All those normal things. And I've got a new business I'm starting out here. There's my new office that I'm just setting up. So it was just kind of like, football over here for a minute. And then, you know, I'm in the office today and my first 2 hours are all football stuff. Under 23 game manager, Barry, contracts, you know, players, you know, the usual.
100 free ticket requests from Man City, I'm sure.
I just want to make it clear, and I apologize. I've had emails galore from people about tickets. I'm not in charge of tickets. People have to stop asking me. So, no, I'm not getting involved in the ticket process. I'm not getting involved in who sits where. I'm not at the game. I think my partners are flying in for the game. I'm happy for them. Massive cup game, hopefully on TV, and they deserve that. I'm going to be in Dubai drinking, shagging, and hopefully enjoying watching my team playing like the number one football team in the world. But really, I'm parking that. I'm just the next few weeks is like league games. So that's all my interest. So that's Peterborough United. You know, we've got a few other exciting things happening over the next couple of months, you know, non-football related, and the new CEO and my partners will be driving those things and announcing those things. But yeah, I never want to have a transfer window like that again. You know, I'll be really honest with you. It's like, no facts. How was the end of your window at Bradford?
I don't think it was, we had a busy day as well, you know, busy end of the window, you know, chasing down a variety of different players, positions. You know, I think there's a few holes in the squad. We ended up with, I think it was two or three on deadline day, which, you know, we'll see if they're, we've talked all the way through the window how difficult it is to get talent, you know, this time around. And, you know, some of the numbers that have been bandied around for players who are pretty average players suddenly become in demand, especially when they're strikers. So we signed Del Finesco. I'm sure it's not pronounced like that, but it's the Bolton player who was at Blackpool for a while as a striker.
Was he ex-Aston Villa?
I think earlier in his career, yeah. We brought back Luke Hendry, who played for us a few years ago and was actually part of the, when he got let go, it was when everybody started to turn on Edin Rahic, our old co-owner. So, you know, he will come in as probably right back or right center back. We'll see. We let go Niall Canavan, which was a little bit of a surprise. He'd only been with us for a year, but I suppose his performances had kind of dipped this year. But he was captain, but we let him go to Barrow. You know, I guess he got an offer. He got an 18-month deal offer, and we weren't willing to give him a deal in the summer. So, you know, best for all parties, I think, for him to go on his way. And we brought in Tom Elliott from Salford.
I remember the next Wimbledon boy went to Millwall. Battered us in one game, scored a goal. He's a unit. He's a unit. Technically not the best, but he's a unit, you know. So, and not prolific, but if you're looking for a certain style, if you've got somebody who can score goals off him, you know, you've got a chance.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the hope is that each one of these can chip in with a few, you know, collectively to make up for, you know, going and getting the ever elusive 20 goal a season man. We got Andy Cook up front who, you know, we'll get the goals if he gets the opportunities.
Yeah.
But we've had a pretty tough week. You know, we had two home games, lost one, drew one. We lost at Harrogate on Saturday, which for us, again, is always a little bit of a humiliating experience. And that's no disrespect to Harrogate because what they've done is fantastic. But, you know, it's the kind of Harrogate are the team that you would always play in preseason and send the kids to. And now we played them three times and we've lost every one of them.
Well, you've lost two in a row now?
Well, we've lost two in a row. We've drawn and drew one before that, yeah. It's getting toxic.
Okay.
You know, people are turning against the manager and he's coming out kicking, you know, as you would expect Derek Adams to do.
His personality is not going to take that line down.
I mean, it didn't help when he came out at the weekend and said, well, I guarantee you will be in the playoffs, you know, and then you lose to Harrogate and, you know, don't look too great in doing so. So he's setting himself up to fail even more. There's just a lot of discontent around
it. I don't mind that. I like that. You know, we back it up, but obviously I don't mind a manager putting that on his back. So, you know, but obviously, look, I mean, yeah, I mean, did I read something about poor Ryan getting, you know?
Yeah, so Ryan's, you know, getting abuse, people posting his phone number online, getting messages. And so, you know, he had to change his phone number.
Who posted his phone number online?
Just, you know, jackass on Twitter.
That's unforgivable.
Yeah, and then he's getting nasty messages. I mean, it's ridiculous. And that's kind of where the toxicity has brought us at this point.
Jesus Christ. Well, I must get his number off you because obviously if his old number is not working anymore, I'll reach out. I didn't realize it was getting that bad for him, and he doesn't deserve that. He's a good kid.
No. And, you know, I think the people that support him, you know, others will say, well, why are you supporting him? Well, Ryan's job is to provide a good budget for the manager to go and do whatever he needs to do with and make sure that, you know, he's increasing the commercial revenue of the club and that the stadium's in a good state and he's doing all those things. He's not the one that's going and choosing which players to buy on transfer deadline day.
Wow. Okay. So you're not feeling too optimistic at the moment then?
I mean, it feels to us like the season's done, but they may surprise us. So, you know, we live in hope. It's the hope that gets you, isn't it?
Who do we have next?
Who do we have next? We have Stevenage away tomorrow. Well, so we record this on Monday. By Wednesday when we publish, you know, we've already played them, but that's who we've got next is Stevenage away.
It's not done yet, so don't lose hope. You know what I mean? Hopefully, look, an experienced manager, if you can turn it around, a couple of wins suddenly change everything. That's football. So, you know, let's stay positive. And Bradford fans, don't be abusing people like Ryan. That's not going to help anybody. You know, as much as I understand everything going on.
I mean, fortunately, it's always the vocal minority. And, you know, a lot of people came out and, you know, echoed those thoughts because I think every decent person recognizes that that's well crossing the line.
No, a massive crossing the line. It's we're seeing too much of it in football. We're seeing fans on the pitch. We've seen it with Rotherham Accrington the weekend. We saw Forest yesterday, Leicester. You know, I don't know what COVID's done. It's broken everyone's brains. And, you know, there's so much toxicity on social media. You're going after, like, directors. I don't care about people going after me. It's fine. But it's enough already. And then attacking players on pitches. Now, that can't happen. They need to give stewards and cautious to carry. Like, with all due respect. You know what I mean? If, like, somebody's coming at me on a pitch, I'd fucking want them taken out. You don't know if they have a knife. like we need to bring back the old coshes, you know, where you hit people's knees if they try and run off the pitch. And I'm sure the woke brigade listening to me saying that now will be coming after me for that. But somebody's going to get hurt. Like Monica Seles in tennis years and years ago, you know, getting stabbed. Somebody's going to get hurt. And, you know, people who are stewards get paid like 12 quid an hour.
And they put themselves in harm's way.
Yeah, they don't want to put their life on the line. They've got no sense of protection. So, look, lots to talk about. Let's come back after the break. We're going to deep dive on lots of football stuff. We'll talk FA Cup, obviously surprises. We'll talk, there's a few questions I think for Sunderland fans, management changes. We'll see you after the break, folks.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the pod. So let's just go in, before we get some questions, even over the last week or so, it seems like the manager merry-go-round has continued. With quite some changes. I think the one that happened furthest ago, for a longest ago from when we're recording here, is Watford. Now you called Ranieri, I think, only lasting something like 60 days, didn't you? So Roy Hodgson, I'm sorry, that was a little bit of out of left field, I thought.
I think they're at the stage where if it were early in the season, there'd be another different type of foreign manager would come in. And I think they're at a stage where they went down last time and they probably think, Roy's your typical, you know, he is what he is. He's almost in the Allardyce fashion. Defence, clean sheets first, go from there. And Watford have actually got some decent attacking players in the offensive part of the pitch. So if they get the clean sheet side right, I actually think he'll keep them up. So, you know, I do. I think he'll keep them up. And obviously, it was, you know, that would have been a blockbuster for ratings on Saturday. It was at 0-0 with Burnley. So I can imagine the TV companies all quite Harry Carey over that. Be like, oh my God, this is the only game we've got outside of the FA Cup. So, oh, Roy's not my cup of tea, but he's a professional. You know, I met him a few years ago and they played us in a pre-season friendly at Fulham. So, and he's drinking a Stella Artois in my office and whatever. I was like, listen, whatever floats your boat, different type of manager. Palace made the right call. He kept them steady for a few years. They had some rebuilding to do. They changed when the rebuild was coming. So, I think he'll basically go in there and keep Fulham up. I'm not sure they'll keep him. Look, great payday for him.
Right.
And a guy his age, credit to him to be doing it still at that age. And, you know, the energy, the passion, whatever him and his staff do when they go in, the one thing you can't say they're not, I mean, they are studious when it comes to defending. You know, they know how to keep a clean sheet. They know how to tighten things up. They know how to make their teams really hard to beat whilst not attractive on the eye to watch. And I'm sure Palace fans will probably say that to people. You know, real counter-attacking setup. They really seem to do the business. So fair play to them. And yeah, if I was to put money on them, I think they'll stay up.
How about Frank Lampard going in at Everton?
Yeah, as everyone knows, I was never the biggest Lampard fan when he was at Derby or when he went to Chelsea. Probably what they need, actually. You know, they've had a few Champions League winning managers go in there, some big names. They've really overspent the last few years. I know the owner gets a lot of stick, but Christ, he spent like $500 million. You can't criticize them for not spending money.
What more can he do?
Yeah, but obviously, you know, the managerial appointments haven't worked out. Benitez was a bizarre one. That was never going to work. I think Lampard will win a lot of games. This actually could be the making of Frank Lampard. And I like the signings he made. I like the Van der Beek and I like the Dele Alli one, because he definitely needed to get out of Tottenham. So don't be surprised to see Lampard, you know, steady the ship for the rest of this season. And have Everton before Christmas next year, top six, might fall away a bit. Because I think there's a financial fair play. They're very limited in what they can do because of the overspending. But they've got some good young players. And, you know, if that's the route they're going down, he's probably the right manager for that. And if they give him a bit of time, this could be the making of him as a proper manager. Like I've always said, I thought some of the jobs came too soon for him. You know, and I think the staff around him are going to be key. You know, having a proper number two and you know, people around who can do the business. So, yeah, I think good times for Everton fans. I think it was a good appointment. I like that appointment.
Now, do you think that Wayne Rooney was ever in the hunt for that? Or, you know, is Wayne Rooney proven himself of a Premiership opportunity yet?
No. I it's the perfect match because it's his club. I think he's 2.5 years away from that job. Mm-hmm. Listen, he's the Championship manager of the year so far for what he's done at Derby. And, you know, whether his agents have linked him with him or they wanted to have a conversation just out of politeness was this way. And really, look, I like the fact he did a video and said, look, I have no interest interviewing for the job. What a job to do at Derby. I think whoever goes in and buys Derby, you know, their best bit of business would be to keep him. Whether they're in the champ, whether they're in League One, him and his number two seem to have really got a good team going on there. And they're obviously very, very good number one and two. You know, again, the stuff he's been able to do with younger players, experienced players, he's done an incredibly good job. I never thought he'd do the job he's done, but considering what he's been dealt with, the circumstances, if you're a new manager and you keep telling players, I can't give you a contract, I don't know if you're getting paid this month, that player's just left today. I mean, the shit gone, that's for a new manager. Forget about being an iconic footballer and, you know, England's best player and all that crap. As a manager, you're dealing with 20, 25 players in the training grounds, and every other day, there's another fucking blow-up, another situation, another scenario, another road bump. He's dealt with it all really well. I've seen experienced managers who can't deal with that.
I'd say it's even harder for him because he was England's best footballer, because he's had that life, because he hasn't had exposure to the problems and the challenges that not getting paid is going to bring to the... So it's like football secondary at this point, and he's figuring out how to deal with that.
100%. 100%. So, he's just done an incredible job. Unbelievable.
And then we have Steve Bruce going into West Brom, which I was actually really happy to see Steve Bruce get another opportunity, because I just think he was really badly done to.
Yeah, listen, I like Brucey. I think he's had a horrible time. And, West Brom, obviously, when you play the style of football their previous manager played, you have to win. So if you don't win, you're in trouble. So I think Brucey, expect West Brom to be a dark horse.
And staying in the Championship, what do you make of Grant McCann leaving Hull and Shota Avaladze? Like, we touched it because it was, rumoured last time we had a pod. Obviously, a few days later, it was made official.
Got it for him. Done a great job. Trying circumstances. Won a league title. Was keeping him in that league this year. Again, not the biggest budget. He's really become a great manager. Really happy for him. Proud of him. I think Sunderland's best bit of business they could do is give him the job. I think he'd get Sunderland out of League One. If you want honest opinion, him or my manager. If you want promotion from League One, I'm not trying to sell my manager, by the way. I'm just, always astonished at clubs like, multiple winner of League One promotions. Grant McCann, promotion from League One as a player and a manager. I think he's perfect for Sunderland with the philosophy of the new owner, because he's used to my philosophy of younger players. And what he's done at Hull with the younger players, I think he forget Roy Keane, forget about a big name manager. I think Grant McCann and his staff would do an incredible job there. Don't you? What do you think?
I think that he's left. One, it was a really surprising. I mean, it's surprising in terms of on the field, maybe not off the field because of everything that's going on at Hull and the new ownership coming in. But Grant certainly didn't deserve it. I think he's done a fantastic job at Hull, both last year and getting them back up, and this year in, having a competitive team out there and being, lower mid-table? I mean, that's a pretty good job. So I think he's leaving with his reputation enhanced. I'd be interested to know from your perspective, do you think that he can get another Championship job on the back of that, or that he may have to go back into League One?
Look, the other obvious one is, but Barnsley have just put a new manager in. But because he's an ex-Barnsley player, you would always link him to a job like that. Mm-hmm. He's in the Championship. So, being fired is no shame what happened. He's been a victim twice of new owners coming into clubs, basically, and being let go. And that often happens. And I can't take out the whole guy and go, what he's done is horrible. He's got his own plan. It wasn't his man. I fired a manager who wasn't my manager when I bought Peterborough. This is what happens when you buy a football club. So you want your own person, your own ideas. I think the Hull fans are really happy with the whole new ownership. There's obviously a lot of money gone in there. They're in a good place because of Grant. At one stage 18 months ago in the pandemic, they lost 15 in a row. Credit to the former owners keeping him, and then credit for him rebuilding in the summer and getting them out of League One by winning, beating us to our title by 2 points. So, he won't be out of work long, and he would have got a good payoff by Hull. So I'm happy for him and Kelly. He's really, really proved himself now to be a really astute, very good young manager. So if he sits still, if he doesn't get the Sunderland job, there'll be 7-8 big jobs across League One and the Champ in the summer. Big jobs.
Now, when you saw that Lee Johnson was out at Sunderland, was that as surprising to you as it certainly was to me?
After losing 6-0 to Bolton, no. There's obviously, unfortunately, he's had some runs where they've lost 3-4 games, and they haven't lost, they got hammered, battered. And then they've gone on runs where they got him third in the league. And unfortunately, it looks like Wigan and Rotherham could potentially run away with that league. And I understand the new owner. He's impatient. He doesn't want to be hanging around like League One. And I would imagine maybe Johnson wasn't fully on board with the policy. Maybe they had recruitment, disagreements. And I don't know if that truth would ever come out. That's for Lee to tell the truth. but it's always harsh when you fire a manager third in the league. But again, I fired a manager, I think we were fifth or seventh in the league, one, Gary Johnson, because he just didn't agree. It wasn't about football. You know, I got rid of Steve Evans. Again, it was a philosophy argument. It was sometimes there's a breakdown. So maybe the 6-0 offered the opportunity for the owner to do what he wanted to do anyway. And now the big key is, you know, and by the way, I like some of the business they've done. I like the transfer window business. They signed a player I wanted to sign, but he was never going to come to us. But a club like Sunderland come in, they're always going to go there. So I don't know. The next one's important. I've seen Roy Keane's been linked with a job. I'd hang my head around that one. You know, because he's not somebody who I can imagine is going to listen to a 24-year-old owner and the policy of football players. So that'd be the technical directors that have fun dealing with that one. That's not a pop at Roy Keane. I just think sometimes things don't go together. Whereas, like I said, a Grant McCann is a perfect fit. Young manager, young owner. I bought Peterborough 29. I hired a 32-year-old ex-player, however old Fergie was when I hired him, 33. And it was just, we were on the same wavelength. It was easier. You know, so it'd be interesting to see. God bless the Sunderland fans. Jesus Christ, they've been in that league long enough. And I'm sure that they'd probably sell their left fingers to get out of that league. And with the size, I mean, what did they have? 30,000+. They were beaten by Doncaster on Saturday.
Which I know, was 38,000 there and losing at home to Doncaster. Yeah.
It was a big shock of the weekend for me. Not Bournemouth beating Bournemouth. Doncaster, where they are in the form, they win, beating Sunderland away. So you feel for the fan base, because it's an amazing fan base to get that support. Yeah, but they're not out of it. I mean, there's a long way to go.
What do you make of Jermaine Defoe going back?
Yeah, I understand why. It's good commercially. He hasn't really played for a few months. He's 37, 38. Of course, he'll always score goals, but is that the direction? You know, 1 minute you're saying, well, you're not going to sign players over 24. Then you're signing a 38-year-old, yes, famous, iconic player. It's a commercial decision or a playing decision? I'm not sure. I think it's more commercial. But listen, Defoe's been a professional everywhere he's been. Would I sign him as somebody who'd coach our players? Yes. Would I sign him somebody that's, you know, going to fight in a battle in the championship or whatever else and play 90 minutes every week? I'm not sure that the finances at a club our size would be prudently put there. For a Sunderland to pay someone like him 7-8 grand a week in League One, that's easy peasy when you get 30,000-40,000 fans.
And the last one I want to just touch on is, and again, this was a little bit of a surprise to me, Neil Harris going to Gillingham. You know, we obviously talked to Steve after he left, but
fair play to Scally, like shocked. I've given Scally a bit of criticism, but fair fucking play, Landon Harris. He's a good manager, Harris. And whilst his last couple of jobs haven't been ideal, he's always had pedigree around him. And to go to a club that look dead and buried, you know, at one point in League One, and if that turns out to turn Gillingham around, particularly as well with the lack of budget and the lack of spending, as Steve explained to us. So maybe Scally's found new partners, I don't know. But that was cool. I mean, that was a really, really good appointment. Neil Harris has got pedigree. And yeah, fair play to Gillingham. Really good choice, that one.
Just moving on to other topics before we go to questions, I just have one other topics, and it's more related to the business of sport, really. The last couple of days, we've seen BT and Discovery talking about coming together, I think forming a new joint venture for the football rights. And I just wonder, you know, if does that mean
that's that buying them? Is that they're buying? They're buying BT. That's on the boxing thing.
It's Discovery. So, and I'm not sure is DAZN owned by Discovery. So Discovery
has Discovery done a deal? Have they bought BT Sport?
Well, Discovery have done a deal to create a joint venture between their assets, their sporting assets, and BT Sport. Which I just saw, you know, recording this Monday. I saw that last night, so it's relatively hot off the press.
I thought DAZN were doing it. DAZN is the subscription boxing service. I quite like them. They're all Russian. And I thought that was their way of getting into English football. Do you know what I mean? They were going to buy the BT kind of sports side of things and the package. And so if it's Discovery, you know, Discovery are now in a merger with AT&T. I believe it's, is it AT&T?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure which one it is.
I'm sure Discovery have done like a massive joint. It's like a 100 million billion merger with one of the massive big networks here in the States. It's not AT&T. It's one of the other big ones.
Let's have a look. Yeah, having a quick. It looks like Warner. It's a split for Warner Media Discovery. I think it's with AT&T. So AT&T is a spin off Warner Media in a $43 billion Discovery Media merger.
Right. So, yeah. So there's obviously a lot of money to spend. And listen, a great way to get into the UK market. Discovery Plus is a big thing now in the States. So, listen, clever. I wish I'm an Apple shareholder. I wish Apple were as prudent. you know, and went and bought all of that. And, you know, then finally, like, you know, basically like streamed football and ran a subscription service because I think it'd be Blockbuster. So I don't know what BT are playing at, you know, because I would have thought it was quite profitable and you know, getting people. It's the only reason I have BT telephone line is to have the BT Sports. I use Virgin Internet. So my house in the UK, I only have a phone line because the BT Sports comes free with it or whatever. So, yeah, I'm not sure that's going to affect them.
Well, it's these subscription businesses, you know, like Discovery have their own subscription channel, you know, like ESPN Plus, like Disney Plus. I mean, they're all after content, aren't they?
I was speaking to my investment manager this morning. I was doing a few trades in the stock market, and my friend was saying to me, why are you buying this one and that one? And I said, because I think I bought a lot of Spotify shares, you know, obviously go Joe Rogan. And, you know, basically, I think they're going to end up taking over and being number one for music streaming. Like, at the moment, the number one anyway, but I think they'll have the lion's share of the market eventually. But everything's streaming. Like, I check my credit card every month, my kids. Fuck me, I've got Discovery Plus, I've got HBO Max, I've got Disney Plus, I've got Apple Plus. There isn't a subscription out there.
Paramount now have one or something.
I've got Paramount, I've got it already. Yeah. Yellowstone. I've got, you know, CBS. I've got ESPN Plus, which I was able to watch the posh on TV over the weekend on my Apple TV. I must have 15 different fucking subscriptions. What a great model. I wish we could sub out the podcast every month and get some fucking income.
You know, I see that model is ultimately it's going to, you can't have such a fragmented market. So I imagine that there's going to be a lot of merger and acquisition in that space.
Eventually, there's going to be two or three masters. Mm-hmm. And I've always said, I think it'll be Amazon and Apple.
Yeah, and Disney.
Yeah, because like over the weekend, me and Natalie binge watch Reacher. It's on Amazon. I'm a big Jack Reacher fan, you know, from the books and movies. So they've now released a TV show. So we watched like 8 episodes across 2 days. It wouldn't be your cup of tea. It's like red-blooded, you know what I mean? Hardcore fucking, you know, ex-military guy killing people. I'm joking. So
give me the kids show.
No. Fucking kids have their own TVs, you know what I mean? So I wasn't watching any of that. But to be fair, I took my girls to see Scream 5 on Friday. I promised, you know, when I got back from the UK, finally, we're big horror buffs. So we went to see Scream 5. That was good fun.
Horror, definitely not my cup of tea. The Jungle Book was too scary for me.
Is that my son hates horror? My girls, like my 12-year-old daughter, fucking loves horror movies, and my 15-year-old as well. So we really enjoyed that, you know.
So let's go to a couple of questions we got in. We have Stephen who sent in an email. He's a Bradford fan.
Four questions. Sorry.
Yeah.
I just want to say the best result of the weekend in the cup was Bournemouth.
Yeah.
Danny Hunter, the manager, what they do at that club, magnificent. I want to, you know, it would be remiss of me not to congratulate them and fucking say to them, amazing. Aaron McLean called it. He was doing his commentary on one of the sports channels and said they got 17 clean sheets. They're one of the toughest teams to break down. When they get ahead, fuck me. You know, you're not getting anything out of them. Resilient motherfuckers. Bournemouth had all the play. Couldn't break them down once they went ahead. And for Bournemouth to do what they've done financially, Danny, the owner, deserves so much credit and kudos to him. Like, he's one of the nice guys out there, like, as regards to how he runs his club in non-league, and they've created some good players. Yeah, really, really impressed with that. That, for me, their run is up there almost with Bradford years ago doing what they did at Chelsea and whatever else. I mean, you know, they're in the last 16 of the FA Cup, you know, and who are they playing next? I can't remember who they got.
Everton. Let me see. I've got the...
Everton away.
It is Bournemouth, Everton away. Yeah,
fantastic. So hopefully we're both on TV and we both get the 110 grand we deserve. So on to the questions, Philip.
Well, and a shout out to Kidderminster as well. Kind of heartbreaking for them. Last minute of normal time, last minute of extra time.
I had it on, like, watching, you know, before our game, whatever. I was, like, gutted for them. I think even David Moyes felt sorry for them. I mean, absolutely gutted. So, you know, massive credit, but they ain't getting the headlines like Bournemouth. So, gutted for them.
Let's go to the question first from Stephen, who's a Bradford fan, and he asks, how long do you stick with the two-year plan, and when do you know it's failed?
You'd already have signs. You know, even if you're 7 months into the two-year plan, you already know. Well, look, here's the truth of Bradford fans. It comes down to this. How's the relationship between the manager and the CEO? And the CEO and the owner? Is the CEO protecting the manager from the owner who wants him out? Or is everything a hunky-dory? Now, we've had Ryan on again, and we're not going to exhaust him and have him on again. Do you know what I mean? For now. But right now, it's all about relationships. Put the results to the side. Ryan's a practical guy. Is he getting pressure from the German owner? He is German, isn't he, the owner? Is he, you know, is that owner ringing him going, fuck me, I've watched us lose twice, you know, in a row. I'm watching us lose at home. We're losing to big rivals in Harrogate Town. You know, we shouldn't be beating a team of our stature. You know, the fans are at me on social media. I'm getting, you know, grief. You know, we need to make a change. We're 10 points from the playoffs or whatever you are. You know, blah, blah, blah. It just depends on the atmosphere inside the club. Like at our club, you can sense the toxicity on social media from younger fans who are coming for me. You know, they're coming for me about my recruitment process. They're pinging in my partners, you know, about the, you know, how do you trust this guy with the recruitment and did it, you know. So I got the tin hat on. But I've been around a long time. I'm okay. It exhausts me, but I'm around. You know, they're coming for my manager, you know, fire the manager, fire the manager. You see all of that. You can feel it when you don't play well at home. There's a little bit of uneasiness. You then get the nice fans, the nicer ones who've been around a long time, who message you and they're with you and they support you. And I was able to give a few of them hugs when I was at the last home game, Sheffield United game. It really depends on what's going on inside the four walls. Darren Ferguson, there was no danger of him losing his job. Very clear. And I've made that clear for weeks. You know, fully, fully support him. And whilst that hasn't been great, you know, this is our plan and we'll ride it to the end. So I don't know what the message coming from Bradford is. I guess the question I would ask you is, if they lose the next two games, do you think he's gone?
I'm not sure the answer to that question, because I think that we've had so much churn of managers. There is a desire to stick this one out. And, you know, the only constant in all this churn of managers is the fans, you know, getting impatient after 6 months. So at what point you got to break that cycle? You know, and that's the decision that Ryan's got to make. You know, does he look at the toxicity and say, this clearly isn't going the direction that I wanted? Hold his hands up and say, you know, let's move on and let's do it sooner before it gets worse? Or is it, look, this is a plan. We came in with a plan and we just need to sit tight and be patient.
You watched the team lose. Was it 2-0 on Saturday?
Yes.
So, you know, are they with the manager or not?
I think so. I mean, they were the better team and they just, it's just not going in the back of the net.
Okay.
I mean, that seems to be the story of the season.
So you're not getting disgraced in a footballing game. You're not getting battered.
No, I mean, the football's not interesting. You know, I think that's part of the problem is that it's dull football.
You always knew that. You always knew that. I said that to you in the summer. You always
yeah.
knew that.
Oh, yeah.
You always knew styles managers have. So, you know, you bite the bullet, you won't get promotion. You know, you knew that anyway. You know what I mean? Like I said about if they hired Steve Evans, Bradford fans have to forget about the theatrics. They have to forget about shouting and screaming. They have to forget about, and they've got to enjoy the wins and the promotions. So it's not a price you want to pay.
And when you don't have wins, then it puts more of a spotlight on the performance. And I think that's what's happening right now.
Correct. So let's see how the next two games go.
So we have a question from another Steve on email. He says, Barry Fry recently said in an interview that Posh have a relegation clause in players' contracts. Should you get relegated to League One? His question is, you know, kind of what's the difference between players like giving people, having relegation clauses, so wages going down on your side, and perhaps the challenges of, well, players aren't going to sign for us because they don't want to get into a relegation battle.
Yeah. We, you know, I insisted on that. So we have a high percentage drop for our players. Just equally, they have a high percentage raise and bonuses if they go up. And same for the Premier League. Our players' wages go up, I think, four times the amount in the Prem. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's always like checks and balances. So same for the staff. Everyone has clauses. And by the way, not just football staff. Staff off the pitch. And like, this is when I was like speaking to some of the players, you know, Ollie and whatever, and people saying, look, I understand you want to move home and be near your family. But I've got 200 employees whose livelihoods are on the line too here. And I said, I have to think of them. I think of you and your family, but I got to think of the 200 people. And all their wages are affected if we go down. So if I lose my captain, one of our best players, you know, those 200 people are going to have their own situation. So it's one of them fine balancing acts. And I think it would be absolute grotesquely incompetent any club not to have clauses in contracts for players. We had it in the summer, players coming. They wouldn't come with a relegation clause in. And they wanted a release clause if we did get relegated. So it's like, well, hang on. You can't have a both ways.
Yeah. It's either or none.
Yeah. So I kind of turned it down, you know, and said, no, we lost players because they didn't want to take dips. And, you know, and I understand it's we're already paying well. And a dip is a dip because of what's happened in League One and the financial drop. So I'm trying to run a really prudently well-run ship here. And I know some fans hate that. And would like us to go crazy and just say, oh, I'm going to pay him 15 grand a week and there'll be nothing in the clause about League One and blah, 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 blah. Well, that's great. But that 15 grand a week would be 25% of a typical budget League One and 1%. But he breaks his fucking toenail and he's out for 5 months. Do you know what I mean? And by the way, there's financial fair play and there's rules. It's kind of incompetent. If I have 20, 30,000 fans filling the coffers up on a Saturday, maybe I can bake that cake and make the gourmet meal I was talking about. But really, with the vegan ingredients, I'm doing my fucking best here. And that's just the way it is.
So I got a question from Peter, who said, with the closing of the January window, it prompted him to ask, how you deal with players who are in the last 6 months of their of a well-paid contract, but unlikely to even feature in an 18-man squad? You know, is that the time when you start looking at mutual termination, see if you can get them, you know, kind of some kind of agreement, or are they just going to sit out the last 6 months of that contract and you kind of keep them away from the rest of the squad if there's negativity related to that?
You can't always keep them away as much as you'd like to. You can kind of get the train with the under-23s and play games and stuff. Then you have the PFA in your case and you've got players moaning and da-da-da-da-da. So, look, you always judge it by a player. So, like, a Dembele is an asset. So, doesn't want to be here. Manager's not fussed if he's here or not. Probably better for us if he's not. You then try and get the most money. Player with no value, hasn't played for a while, nobody wants them, then you try and do a deal. If the player won't do a deal, you kind of know the player, what they're all about. You know? Really, that, and they're within their right to stay and get their money. A lot of the time you can do a deal. Because most players, 90% of them, they're good eggs. They want to go and play. So you would say to them, let me write you a check. Let me pay you up and do a deal over time. And you can go and get a club and hopefully get your career going again. You know, nobody goes into football, you know, whether you're an owner or a player or a manager or a staff member, to always have conflict with the person on the other side of the table. What you're trying to do is reach a compromise. And the perfect compromise is, look, we owe you 50 grand, we'll give you 20, we'll pay it over two installments or whatever else. You'll make the other 30 up by getting a new contract at another club. And you can go and train with a club, and who the heck knows, you might be able to rebuild your career.
Right.
You know, there's always a compromise to be found. In the short percentage of people you deal with, agents and players, sometimes there's not, and then it's a conflict. And then it's like, well, fuck you, sit in the stands. Mm-hmm. And that's happened too. So this is football, that's what it's like. It's all about what you can negotiate and what you can do.
So the last question then for today comes from Gordon, who Dara recently mentioned a player that he'd sold to Forest Green, having a promotion clause, meaning Peterborough would due 25 grand. The question is, how does that work in reality? Is there some kind of database of clauses to monitor, or, you know, at the spreadsheet to keep tracking, or does the FA deal with it?
Me and Baz know every clause. And then what it is like, it's Matty Stevens. So, yeah. Like, every time he scores 10 goals, I think we get another 20 grand. So, we've already got our money back. We paid Barna. Plus, we have a nice sell-on clause. So, he's now, like, the leading goal scorer in League 2.
Yeah.
You know, again, people question my recruitment. While some of them maybe a year afterwards come good, even the ones we move on early and don't come off for us, look what happens. I could potentially have another Golden Boot winner on my hands and a kid I paid 150 grand for as an 18-year-old. And he is prolific. He's what Bradford need.
Right.
That kid could score with his left nut with his eyes shut. You know what I mean? He's not a road runner. He's not a fucking target man. He is just a goal scorer. And right now you'd be like, well, fuck the road runner and fuck the target man. Just give me the goal scorer.
Yep. That's all we need.
You know, Matty Stevens in your team, you'd be second in the fucking league if you are creating enough chances. So, and he's young and he'll go again. So we'll probably end up making a nice surplus profit on him. But in answer to the question, there doesn't need to be a database at DFL. All the contracts are lodged with EFL. So the minute we're due, like I think we might have invoiced recently for he scored 10 goals. So we put an invoice in, let's say it's 10 grand. The invoice will go to Forest Green. Forest Green, the money gets paid, I think, to the EFL, then it gets paid to us. So it's, you know, you never get a club trying to get out of a clause. You know, we had a clause, I was shitting myself. Idris Kanu, and we didn't know it was in there. If he got an international competitive cap, we'd have to pay a massive installment of a fee to his ex-club. When Barry rang me and told me that, I nearly fell off my fucking chair. It's like, you know, and of course you want him to do well in the African Nations Cup, but I'm secretly praying, don't fucking start the game. Again, my budget's like really, I haven't got much to play with here. You're about to kill the rest of it.
We weren't accounting for that one.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And that, in that case, I'd forgotten that one, you know what I mean? Because we'd signed him 5 years ago. You always try and ask for clause. Like Dembele, every time Dembele falls over, you know, we get paid. Scores a goal, makes a goal, you know, promotion. You know, Bournemouth go up, money. Stay in the champ, gets paid per games. Do well in the Prem and he plays in the games and stays there, X amount. You know, we'll do very well out of the Dembele. Of course, if he'd had a longer-term contract, we'd have got a lot more money for him. That's normal. But we don't usually carry players for 4 years. And we carried him for nearly 4 years since we stole him off Bradford that day. So, you know.
The car back at Viper Parade, I think.
And I'm delighted that, you know, Grimsby have made a few quid. You know, they had a good sell-on. So Grimsby have, you know, out of the deal we did with Grimsby, they've probably made now the original transfer fee to sell-ons, you know, they're making over 550 grand.
And that money's going to go a lot further today with them in the National League.
They made from Ryan Bennett over 1.5 million from us, you know. So there are all these things that help the pyramid. You know, I think it was missed in the transfer window. Fuck all money was spent by Premier League clubs in our league. I want to say it was £1 million. I nearly fell off my seat when I saw the figure. You'd have to do your research. But so much money went abroad. No fucking money. You want to talk about changing things and you know, being a part of a football family. Anything we need to change is looking at how much money leaves our shores. Leaves our shores and buys players from Portugal and Italy and Spain and France. You know, fuck all was spent in our league. Like, fuck all. You know, I think the most would have been if Liverpool had got the Carvalho deal done with Fulham. That would have been the most amount of money that went into our league. And even that didn't get fucking done because it missed the deadline. So I think I read somewhere less than 2 million quid was spent, you know, from the Premier League to the Football League. We're in a recession here. That's not helping.
And then they wonder why we go back and, you know, try and negotiate bigger percentage clauses of TV money.
Yeah, it's horrendous. So you know, they're the things that are not hurting our game. They're not helping our game, you know, and those things have to change for me. I'm happy for Liverpool to spend 52 million euros on a Portuguese, you know, obviously he's not Portuguese, but from a Portuguese club, you know, in the deal they did. Great, fine. But, I'd love them to have spent 28 million on a player in a championship. And then that player to sell on would go to the player before and the club before. There's not enough of that for me that goes on. And I don't know how you change that. You know, I don't know what you can do there. People always say English players are too expensive. Well, with all due respect, I would say the Championship's as good as the Portuguese League. And that player scored, I don't know, 15 goals, 10 assists. Well, I could show you a couple of players. The boy at Bournemouth, Brennan Johnson, will probably be just as good as a player down the line in the future. He won't get sold for 52 million euros. It'll be more like 20 million quid. But no one bought him. Not that Forrest wanted to sell. But, you know, you get my point. Again, I'm not having a dig, but I think some of the young players in the champ under the age of 23 are as good as some of these players that come from France, that come from Portugal. They're as good as. And by the way, they've been playing in the English competitive leagues, which gives them a head start on some of the foreigners who take 6 months to a year to settle down. And there has to be a price set for that.
All right. Well, on that note, we had a lot to talk about this week. We'll wrap it up there. I want to thank everybody for listening. As always, please keep those questions coming in. hardtruthfootball.com/contact. You can go submit the contact form or contact@hardtruthfootball.com. Send over your email.
Thanks, guys. Take care. Appreciate it. We've smashed our record. Steve Evans is now officially, I think, the number one most listened to episode and followed by Adrian Durham at number two at the moment. So those two are the big boys at the moment. So more guests will follow.
Yeah, we're working on it.
Take care, everyone.
All right. Thanks, everybody. Take care.